Thanks for listening to AM 620 KTOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now, coming to you live from the banks of the Willamette River, it's Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman.
You've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. My life has value.
Online at 620kvoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KVOJ.
I want you to get up right now and go to the window and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Welcome to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. I'm Adam Klugman, and you're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland, on an absolutely insane day here in Portland. I mean insane. The sky is blue. It's 70 degrees. There's not a cloud out there. The daffodils are blooming. The cherry trees are blossoming. Convertible tops are down. My grass is up to my kneecaps. These are the kind of days that we pay dearly for here in Portland. So if you've got something to do outside, and I suggest strongly that you get outside, take your radio with you. If you're going to wax your car, you're going to transplant some bulbs. If you're going to get down and dirty with your garden, take your phone and your radio with you, because you're going to want to be a part of this show. We have a great show, because it's times like this and days like this that make me think about freedom, make me think about reemergence. It's, you know, winter in Portland is one endless gray prison of a day. It never ends. And the sun comes out and suddenly we all feel liberated. It's Easter, a time of rebirth. It's Passover, a time to celebrate the passage from bondage into freedom. That's going to be the theme of the show. What does freedom mean to you? I'm going to tell you what it means to me. But first, I want to acknowledge Sarah Molnar on the board, our content producer and call facilitator, Zachary Rabaroff, our associate producer in the Windy City, Al Nowakowski, and of course, our mistress of the social media, Kat Jarboe. And speaking of social media, speaking of Facebook, we want you to use the Facebook today. Go to Facebook, type in Mad as Hell in America, and press the like button and become a part of the show by typing in a comment or a question on Facebook. I'm going to be monitoring Facebook all day. So we're going to try to integrate Facebook into the show, and I'm going to remind you. So also, schlep your computer outside and be a part of the show on Facebook, your telephone, your radio. This is a really great show. We've got David Swanson with us, who's back from Afghanistan. He went there on a peace mission, had a very interesting experience, a very interesting first experience. And he couldn't even get in initially because as he was flying in, all the tumult was erupting over Terry Jones' burning of the Quran. And so he couldn't get in, so he wrote this just tremendous blog about how he's watching himself get redirected over Uzbekistan. He interviewed some really interesting young people over there who are part of the Afghan Youth Peace Movement. And we're going to have some clips from that. And we're going to talk to him about how the Afghan people feel about our occupation of their country. And he is always, always such an interesting, articulate guest. So you don't want to miss that. We're also going to talk about, in the third hour, we're going to talk to Christina Eisenberg about why the Obama administration allowed 1,300 gray wolves to be removed from the endangered species list. This is the first time Congress has removed species from the endangered species list. What happened? What's going on? What is up with this president? Also, in the first hour, Linda Frank will be here. She has written a book called After the Auction, which deals with the issue of art and other valuables that were stolen during World War II by the Nazis, Jewish families trying to reclaim things that belong to their family. She chose to write it as a novel. A very interesting choice. Very interesting choice. And I also want to remind you of one more thing. 1-855-MAD-AS-HELL. 1-855-623-2743 is the Mad as Hell hotline where you can leave a message and tell me why you're mad as hell. Someone left me a really kind of fun message this week. Let's go ahead and play there.
Yeah, this is Mike calling from Northern Colorado. There's a lot of things I'm mad as hell about as an American citizen. Anyway, me and 400 million people, like I said, we work our asses off day in and day out. We get more productive according to Labor Bureau standards and statistics every year, and yet we get more and more shafted by the, let's say, the middle finger of the free hand of the free market. And I'm tired of it.
The middle finger of the free hand of the free market. You gotta love that. That's great. The middle finger of the free hand of the free market. That is certainly what's going on. The number 855, mad as hell. That's the hotline. The number's here if you want to talk to me. 503-248-0620. 1-866-452-0620. In the next segment, it's going to be all about your calls. All about your calls. 503-248-0620 or 1-866-452-0620. Now, I said that I wanted the show to be about freedom. So I want you to start thinking about what freedom means to you. Because last Monday, I went to a friend's Seder. And if you don't know, Seder is a Passover. It's a celebration of Passover, which marks the passage of the Jewish people out of Egypt, out of bondage and slavery, and into freedom. And so my friend asked me to say something about the nature of freedom at the dinner. And for weeks, I didn't know what exactly I was going to say. And I kept rolling it around in my head, kind of formulating all of these half-thoughts. But I never really got a handle on what I wanted to say. And then when it was my turn to speak, something came out of my mouth that surprised me. And it was this idea that freedom is more than just political. I mean, I obviously have a political orientation, so I think my friend was expecting me to talk about freedom in a political context. But what occurred to me as I stood up was the idea that freedom is more than just the right to speak freely, think freely, act freely in a free society without fear. Certainly, that is one really essential definition of freedom, but it's an external kind of freedom, and it's only one aspect. Now, I'm not saying that political freedom isn't absolutely essential to every other freedom we might consider, because it is. It absolutely is, and we must always insist that none of us are free until all of us are free. For example, Bradley Manning, a private first class, is being held and tortured without due process in our very own country, in America. And therefore, we must insist that as a society, we are not yet truly free. And we must demand his release, and we must not relent, because it is not just his freedom we are fighting for, but our own. Because locked inside his cell is the idea of freedom, and there is nothing more important in this world than this idea. People can live purposeful lives with a minimum of food, but they cannot do so with a minimum of freedom. But where does it come from? Where do we source this yearning to be free? And how do we define it in a way that places the responsibility for what it means to be free on each of us as individuals, and not just as political citizens, but as human beings, as sentient creatures in a universe that intends freedom for everything alive? And I don't mean to use too broad a brush here, but I think it's important to understand, in my opinion, that freedom predates us as human beings. It pre-exists us. It's not something we invented. It's something that invented us. We are made of it. And when we look around at the natural world and we feel awe, we are gawking at an impossible system of laws that do not bind us, that do not confine us, but set forth the conditions that make us free. So what happens? If what I'm saying is true, that we and everything around us intends freedom, then how is it that we could even possibly imagine a system of slavery and imprisonment? How is it possible to be made from the substance, the idea, the principle of freedom, and yet be part of a human history marred with the blood of so many innocent people? This is the question we must ask every day. And for me, the answer isn't political, but deeply personal. Because to speak and think and act freely in a free society is not where freedom ends, but where it begins. Because real freedom comes when I take responsibility for how I imprison myself and others every day. Let me give you an example of what I mean. During the Bush years, I hated George Bush. I mean, I hated him. I hated him for starting an illegal war against an unarmed country based on lies. I hated him for the Patriot Act, for warrantless wiretapping, for presidential signing statements. I hated him for bringing out the worst in Americans and shipping it overseas. I hated the sound of his voice, the ignorant smirk on his face, and the flight-suited, cod-pieced, bring-it-on swagger that perpetually sent the message to the whole world that we were either with him or against him. And it wasn't just him. It was the whole family. Cheney, Rumsfeld, Wolfowitz, Ashcroft, Pearl, Crystal, the whole sick, twisted gang of power-hungry, money-addicted white men who robbed this country of its freedoms, its integrity, and its treasure without so much as a backwards glance. It was like watching someone I love get beaten, robbed, and raped while I was helpless to do anything but watch. And it made me mad. Mad as hell. But then after years of feeling powerless, I violated my own credo. I crossed over into rage, and I got stuck there. And so what did I really accomplish in hating them? All I really did was make myself sick, poison the environment with more of what I didn't want, and keep them and myself imprisoned in a closed system of guilt and blame and attack. And the siren song that kept me crashing on the rocks of my own hatred for that decade was how right I was. And I was right. And I'm still right, because I'm not saying we shouldn't make judgments about what's right and wrong, because we have to. And we must take bold stands for what is right, just as Martin Luther King did. And we must be willing to risk everything for it. But my hatred wasn't about them. It was about me. They don't have the power to make me hate them unless I give it to them. I can't perceive guilt in them unless I perceive guilt in myself. And that guilt and that hatred enslaved me and them and foreclosed on the possibility that anyone inside the circle of my hate will actually get free. Free from guilt, free from hatred, and free from the false age-old belief that someone out there needs to be imprisoned before I can be free in here. And so I no longer agree with Howard Zinn that the highest form of patriotism is dissent. It is a form of patriotism, and an important one, and I will always dissent against injustice, but it is not the highest form of patriotism. As liberals, I believe this kind of thinking binds us to a mindset of negativity that fulfills the conservative stereotype of us. Because what makes us who we really are, as liberals, or progressives, if you still need that term, is not our dissent, but our optimism, our belief in the fundamental goodness of human beings, and the conviction that freedom is defined by a world where we lead with the best in us, where we demand justice for others as passionately as we do for ourselves. And yes, it makes us mad as hell when we see that promise violated, and it should. But when we allow it to move us into hate and fear and attack, we fail in our mission. We abdicate the most essential aspect of freedom, our personal responsibility to remain free within our own beings. And we enslave the world in a prison of our own making. So let's talk about freedom today. Let's define it. What does it mean to you? How do you define it? How are we losing our freedoms in this country? And how do we take a stand for political freedom without losing our personal freedom? You're listening to Mad as Hell in America. Your calls next, 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. Call me now. Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America. I'm your host, Adam Klugman, and you're listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. The numbers here are 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. We're talking about freedom today in the first hour. What does it mean to you? How do you define freedom? And what is the difference between personal freedom and political freedom, and how do they play into each other? Let's go to line two, Julian in Selwood. Welcome to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. What does freedom mean to you, Julian?
Free, aquarium that I moved out of Arizona and moved up to Portland last year.
Right on. Congratulations. You had a beautiful day, man. This is a jackpot of a day. What else? What else? How else do you define freedom? And congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Well, the one thing I don't have to worry. I'm trying to get my grandparents and some other family members to move up here because I'm Hispanic. My family is Hispanic. We were part of the Arizona culture for over 100 years. We founded a lot of the towns and helped build the ditches and everything like that. And then they passed these crazy laws that say my grandparents have to show their papers. And my grandfather is a war veteran. It's just mind blowing. So I come up here and. It's beautiful. You guys really have beautiful country, and the vibe on this whole state and this city has been just excellent. I've really enjoyed my stay.
Julian, thanks so much for the call. Julian, you hit the jackpot, man. This is a beautiful place with beautiful people, loving, accepting, non-right-wing kind of aggressive folks. We're thrilled to be here. Let's go to line three. Jamie in Portland, welcome to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. What does freedom mean to you, Jamie?
Well, I like to think of freedom from want. That was Franklin Delano Roosevelt's idea of economic freedom, freedom from hunger, freedom from homelessness, freedom from sickness, freedom from ignorance. That's the kind of freedom I'm striving for and so, like to think about.
So kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. For you, it's first economic. So once you achieve economic freedom and you have some freedom in your society, then what? What's personal freedom? I mean to frame it in terms of what demons? Is it fear? Is it guilt? Is it shame? Is it self-loathing? What are the things that keep you from being free within your own being?
Well, I'm a working class guy, and freedom from... freedom to be able to make decisions at my workplace about what kind of things we make, what how we distribute them, the decisions about what the company does, they're not in my hands at all. And if I had that kind of freedom that I could make those decisions along with my coworkers, I would feel immensely more satisfied and free.
So let me ask you one more question, Jamie. What keeps you from making that happen in the workplace? What holds you back from being a leader in your own workplace and making it a place where everyone feels free?
Oh, only our abilities to cooperate with each other and our competitive demons, I think.
Well, let me suggest this to you, Jamie, that in the spirit of Mad as Hell, that you take this up, that you say you're not going to take it anymore, that you're going to take a leadership role in your workplace to make yourself and set yourself free. And I bet when you do that, you'll set them free. Let's move on to the next. Thanks for the call, Jamie. Neighbor Dave, line four. Neighbor Dave, welcome to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. What's up?
Mr. Klugman, I just came in from planting potatoes in time to catch the end of your thread there.
Thanks for running in.
You know, I had a great crop of mold growing here, and I'm have to give it up now and actually plant some real things. Freedom to me, freedom of thought and freedom of expression, and I think most beautifully framed in the preamble to the Constitution. And, you know, I think to pull a thread back from a couple of other shows, language and how we continue to lose our freedom in this country because we continue to be framed by our opponents the way they make us fear our own thoughts and our own freedom of expression. And I think one of the best examples of that in the preamble, the line to defend or promote the general welfare. Now, why don't more Democrats take ownership, more liberals take ownership of the Constitution through that phrase?
I agree. Why don't we take ownership of it through our language, the way, as I said a couple of weeks ago, how we self-identify? Let's stop being imprisoned by the way that the conservative movement identifies us. Dave, I got to move on. Thanks so much for the call. Great call. Yep. Let's move on to Joan in Happy Valley. Welcome to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. What's up, Joan?
Well, first of all, as far as the definition, my definition of freedom,
yep.
I mean, what everybody has said is really, I think, very apropos. And I really like what you said when you made it not just political, but also personal.
Right.
And I think with freedom, we have to also take responsibility. And you mentioned that, and I thought that was so powerful.
Thank you.
When we did our Seder the other night, we used the symbolism at the end when you say next year in Jerusalem. We used the symbolism of Jerusalem as being the symbol of freedom for not just us, not just Jewish people, but for everyone. And that we won't be satisfied until everyone has their definition of freedom.
Absolutely, Joan. Next year in Israel is a state of freedom, and it's a state of mind. Thanks so much for the call, Joan. I got to move on. All right, let's move on. Line two, Eddie in Portland. Welcome to Mad as Hell in America. What does freedom mean to you, Eddie?
Oh, hi, Adam.
Hey.
Freedom is clearly stated in our Constitution. It's a government by the people and for the people. And the closest that we've been to retake back our country was in the 2008 elections. But we were betrayed by Obama, and we were betrayed by the Democratic Party.
How were we betrayed by Obama? How do you feel betrayed by Obama?
Well, the change promise wasn't any change. I mean, we've been having the same thing, perhaps worse. I mean, we've been totally controlled by the targeted economic interests, corporations. They ruled our destiny. We don't have anywhere to look after. They are controlling our politicians. They don't even have. They don't even allow us to have the ability to form, a new party which really represents the people.
Eddie, thanks so much for the call. We've got to run. So what are we going to do? How are we going to get free? We can say what we want. We can do what we want. But it's still, we've got corporations running our country. We've got private corporations writing our public policy. How are we going to get free of the oligarchy that is taking control of America? You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman, where America comes to get mad, stay mad, and give them hell. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. We're talking about freedom here on AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station on, no doubt, the finest day of the year here in Portland, Oregon. Sweet, so sweet. Feels like freedom outside. You walk out, the sunshine on your face. It sets you free. It set me free. I'm feeling good today. The number's here, 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. In the next segment, we're going to continue the discussion about what freedom is and what it means to you. We're going to start to try to frame ourselves in a positive context. We've been getting beat up for so long. I think we need to start defining ourselves in the affirmative instead of the defensive. Like neighbor Dave was saying, let's stop running, let's turn, and let's let people know who we are. And we have the freedom to do that in this country, and let's use it before it's too late. Our next guest, we're going to move on to a new subject. It's off topic from freedom, maybe, but I think the theme of liberation plays. Our next guest is Linda Frank. She is a stockbroker turned novelist. She is also trained as a journalist and has a bachelor's of science, political science, and a master's degree in journalism, both from University of Michigan. Having a little trouble. I'm a little too excited today. She is author of the novel After the Auction, which deals with the issue of art and other valuables stolen by the Nazis during World War II. I have a synopsis here, but I'm going to let Linda Frank tell us a little bit about it. Linda Frank, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Adam.
Her book is
a pleasure.
We're glad to have you here. Her book is After the Auction. You can get it at lindafrankbooks.com, amazon.com, and barnesandnoble.com. So, Linda,
yes.
You've written a book called After the Auction. And in a minute, I want you to kind of tell people what it's about. But it deals with the issue of Holocaust survivors and their children who pursue art and other valuables stolen by Nazis during World War II. So before we get into the book, just give us some background on this issue and the scope of it.
Well, the scope of it is tremendous. The Nazis literally had an entire division devoted to looting property from Jews and other wealthy victims of the Holocaust, everything from art, from fine art, down to Judaica, Jewish ritual items, such as the Seder plate in my novel. Of course, we've heard a lot about also Swiss bank accounts, insurance policies, things like that. And this was a very deliberate, concentrated, organized effort. You know, most of the things they did was were deliberate, concentrated, and organized with lists.
Like most of the things they did?
Yes, and, you know, as they took over, you know, in various countries and even within Germany, as they, you know, became more and more powerful, they knew where they were going. They knew who had the art. They knew in Vienna, Paris, et cetera, you know, what the Rothschilds, people like that, had. And so it was very deliberate looting, and they had art specialists. Actually, Goering was quite a collector, some of whom sort of sifted off the top. People who left before the true Holocaust, who were lucky enough to get out, but were either dealers or possessors of a lot of, you know, fabulous possessions that the Nazis wanted, had to quote-unquote sell their collections to dealers at, you know, not such great prices. And many of these dealers went on to operate not only through the war, but become quickly denazified and restored to their previous businesses after the war. Hitler actually planned a museum in Linz for the Thousand Year Reich of his taste in art, and Goering and others, you know, skimmed off some of the rest, and much was just stored in caves until after the war, actually, you know, in readiness, Hitler thought, for the building of his museum in Linz.
We're talking to Linda Frank. She is author of the book After the Auction, available at lindafrankbooks.com. Linda, I remember in the 1990s there was a real surge in publicity around this issue. What came of all that?
What came out of it? I'm sorry, I didn't...
Yes, what came out of all the surge in publicity in the 90s around this?
Well, the surge of publicity resulted in a number of conferences, including a relatively well-known conference in, I believe, 1999, that of art dealers, museum curators, academics all over the world, establishing some principles for museums. And, of course, a lot of museums have found things on their walls that had been looted, and there have been a number of cases. These principles are not binding. So the flurry of, you know, of returns really depends sort of on the consciences of the institutions returning them. It was also a matter of several governments. In cases after the war where art was not immediately, you know, returned to people who made claims, it was returned to the country of origin, and many of them, you know, still hold pieces of art. The significance of the early 90s, in addition to the publicity, another significance is that was when the Iron Curtain fell in the Berlin Wall.
Right.
And the Soviets and their satellite countries, you know, may not have been the looters themselves, at least initially, that the Nazis were, but they certainly, in many cases, you know, have not displayed a great eagerness.
I'm looking at a headline here that reads, Getty Museum agrees to return painting looted by Nazis. It sounds like something that could have come out of the late 1940s.
Right,
but this just happened. That was last week, right? Well, tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I think that was from the Gutsticher collection. And actually, interesting enough, here in San Francisco, there was an exhibit at the Contemporary Jewish Museum that just closed and had previously been at the Jewish Museum in New York about the Gutsticher collection. Mr. Gutsticher was a dealer in Amsterdam, and who was lucky enough to get passage out of Amsterdam just around the time the Nazis invaded Holland. He had, you know, he had been involved in one of those deals where he sold his collection for tremendous, you know, probably, you know, less than 5 cents on the dollar,
sure,
as we would say today. But he had a list. He had a little black book of his entire collection. And unfortunately, he had an accident on the boat going over, actually, from Holland to England en route here. And his wife, his son, and later his daughter-in-law and granddaughter had been trying for years to get things back from the Netherlands, you know, not a country we think of as being difficult. And in the last maybe 10 years, many of those have been restored, that the Netherlands still had, have been restored to the family, and that's a lot of what this exhibit is about. The exhibit is named Reclaimed, but things are still cropping up on the walls of museums such as the Getty.
Okay, so let's talk about your novel,
okay.
After the Auction. We're talking to Linda Frank, who is author of the novel After the Auction. She was a stockbroker turned novelist, but also a journalist, and I can hear it in your voice, and I can see it in the book. It's really a wonderful book, a kind of page ripper, too. There's lots of great information, but it's really exciting, and you just kind of rip right through it. You can buy it at lindafrankbooks.com, at amazon.com, at barnesandnoble.com. Okay, so tell us the story of your novel. Try to synopsize it if you can.
The story of my novel, you know, in terms of the plot, is a woman of a certain age, you know, goes to an auction in 1990 and sees an antique satyr plate that had been looted by her from her family at the auction. She makes a fuss. It quickly gets whisked away, and then she goes after it. This being the season of Passover, at the Passover ritual, we have something where the kids go find the Afikoman, and she codenames, because it's a Seder plate, she codenames her hunt Afikoman. She lives in New York. The hunt takes her from London and ultimately to Israel, and she encounters, it's a bit of a mystery. She's threatened along the way. She confronts a murder, and she also manages to find a little new romance on the way.
I thought that was a very nice touch.
It
reminds me of like one of those movies or stories where you're getting lots of really good information and factual information because your training as a journalist really comes through, but you're also a terrific storyteller. We're talking to Linda Frank. Her book is After the Auction at lindafrankbooks.com, amazon.com. Okay, so let me ask you that.
Yeah.
I love that you chose to make it, center it around a Seder plate as opposed to, you know, a multi-million dollar painting, because I think it highlights that it isn't about the money. It isn't about the fortune or the treasure, that it's about the meaning. It's about the symbology of it. Why does it mean so much to people to get these things back? Tell me about that. Why wouldn't you want to just forget that whole period and move on?
Well, I think, first of all, this Seder plate is not just any old Seder plate. It is a fairly valuable one.
True.
But true, she does not need the money.
Right.
And in truth, I've never seen a Seder plate like this. It had to be a big one. I made up the most fantastic thinking thing.
Of course.
I could do. You know, I've spoken to people. There's a guy in L.A. Whose family is still suing Hungary after all these years. And I've asked him and other people, you know, why. You know, my family, I mean, I had people in my family who died in the Holocaust, but I'm not what you'd call a survivor family, so I really wanted to know, as you do. It's about justice, not just justice. I mean, certainly a Seder plate, any Seder plate, or a Rembrandt or whatever, you know, is not the worth of a person's life. But it's part of the justice of crime, to right a crime, to get justice from a crime. It's also a matter of the fact that the whole looting process was a dehumanization and taking away the dignity of a people. You know, when you take away their culture and, you know, certainly ritual items, you know, their religious items, you know, it was just part of the dehumanization that the Nazis were so spectacular at. But in truth, some of the families have needed the money. Mm-hmm. I mean, some of these, you know, not everything has been a big, big money thing.
Sure.
But you know, for instance, Dave DeChapel, the fellow who's family suing Hungary, you know, in L.A., has said, you know, my family's comfortable, and there are so many heirs now, you know, whatever's left in Hungary, probably, you know, divided up after lawyers' fees, whatever, is not going to be an enormous amount.
Sure.
But in truth, some survivors and survivor families really have needed the money. And, you know, and of course, that is a dying generation. What's interesting to me is people like David and other people I've met who were in their 40s and 50s who are still keeping it going, not just because, you know, of their parents and grandparents, but because they feel too that it's part, that righting these wrongs is part of their legacy and their obligation to the family that didn't survive.
We're talking to Linda Frank, author of after the auction. You can get her book at Linda Frank's, lindafrankbooks.com, amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com. I have two more questions, and I want to kind of get to them quickly if I can. First question is, you're a journalist, and yet you chose to write this as a novel. Why did you choose to write this as a novel instead of, say, a nonfiction, kind of more comprehensive treatise on this?
Well, there have been many of those, and I'm not an art historian or an academic. The key to why how I wrote this book is one key character who is an elderly man who's really the surrogate uncle, almost surrogate father of my main character, Lily, and he is loosely based on somebody my mother met during World War II through her father, a businessman who left, you know, a fantastically art-filled mansion in Warsaw, ultimately came to this country in 1940, and actually by 1950 had amassed enough Judaica again that some of his collection was auctioned in 1950. I heard about this man. My mother told me about him. I thought he sounded like a character, and she said he was. And then I really searched for things about him to write at least an article. But doors were literally slammed in my face. I was in New York once in a Judaica gallery. I mentioned the name. The owner went silent. This man's wife was still living. When I started to do some research through connections, I asked for an interview, was refused, and there's just been very little written. And what I could find, didn't seem to be enough to make it. So,
Linda, that is my music, which means I've got less than a minute to go.
Okay.
We're talking to Linda Frank, author of After the Auction, available at lindafrankbooks.com, at amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com. It is a page ripper of a book, as I said. Give me 30 seconds. Tell me why this book is also about freedom, or at least liberation, as we go out.
Well, I think that people, you know, having the freedom to make these choices, to make these hunts, and rejoicing in the freedom of not living in those times anymore, and being able to pursue or not pursue both religious freedom, economic freedom, as well as freedom in their lives.
Linda Frank, thank you so much for being on the show. You're listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. We're going to be right back with your calls, and we're going to keep talking about what freedom means to you. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. You are listening to AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. It's wonderful to live in a society where we have AM 620 KPOJ to express our personal freedoms. The numbers here are 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. And I mean that about AM 620 KPOJ. I mean, it got me through the Bush years. It was great and comforting and reassuring to tune in every day and to hear that there were people out there who felt as I did. I also want to encourage you to go to the Facebook page. Kerry Bassett has left a comment on the Facebook page defining freedom. Freedom is not being so bound to things that we cannot fight for what is ethical and the right thing to do for fear of losing something. These are really hard times. And in these hard times, it just might set people free, as they have in Wisconsin, to stand up and break the bonds of those who would oppress us. I think that a caller earlier had brought that up, this idea that we're living in a time when corporate interests have taken over our government. I think it's absolute. I mean, I think often back to the interview with Chris Hedges when I said, you know, are we still fighting? Is it over? And he said, yeah, it's over. They won. Well, okay, so they won. So let's take it to round two. Because I think that what we're starting to look like is China, where they have a lot of economic freedom, mobility. We have less and less all the time, but they have no political freedom at all. And that is the direction that we are heading in. And I think that that's the wet dream for the people that are running our country, to break us, as Kerry says, to keep us so busy and so occupied, just fending for ourselves, that we can't fight for political freedom. So economic freedom is essential. Economic prosperity is essential to our personal freedoms and our political freedoms. Let's go to line one, Tara. Welcome to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman. What does freedom mean to you, Tara?
Well, I'm thinking that this system that we live under can't last forever. Economic, political, military. I mean, when you put all those things together and then you think about the environment and everything, it couldn't possibly just last forever. Like, we get in the street and start marching, and all of a sudden we have all our rights back, the environment's fine, we have a good economic system. I don't think it's going to happen.
Why don't you think it's going to happen, Tara? I mean, our thoughts about things are incredibly powerful. So why don't you think it's going to happen? I mean, it's got to happen. If it doesn't happen, then there's no hope.
I think the table needs to be completely cleaned off.
How are we going to do that, Tara?
And we start all over. Well, I'm not sure the way things are going right now, whether who's in charge of doing that.
Tara?
Whether the military's in charge or whether the...
No, Tara, I'll tell you who's in charge. You are in charge. And I am in charge. And everybody listening out here is in charge. This is the mindset that I think we need to break. This is the mindset of slavery. This is the mindset of imprisonment. I can't get out. There's no hope. We cannot take that attitude. Because if we do, we're doomed. We are doomed.
I think we finally got to the point where we finally put so much stuff in the stove where it's just going to overheat and explode, and we're going to have to clean it out from the bottom. I mean, we're going to have to clean out all the weapons. We're going to have to do a whole another economic system or no economic system at all. And I'm talking about, you know, start dealing with people who want to live in a world with other people who seriously want to have peace.
Well, I'm with you, Tara. Thank you so much for the call. I want peace. Who agrees with Sarah that there's no hope? I don't think so. There's got to be hope. We have to be the agents of hope. 503-248-0620, 1-866-452-0620. I think that I do agree with Tara. Here's where I heard hope. Here's where I heard freedom. And what Tara was saying is, we got to clean it out from the bottom. Yes, we do. We have to get busy. We have to get mad as hell. We have to take that stand right now. There is no time left, and we need to demand it. I have not been saying, just because I want to talk about personal freedom, that we do not demand political freedom now, that we do not demand to take our economic system back from an insane Republican Congress that is assaulting every liberal institution. They are repealing the 20th century before our eyes. What are we going to do about it? We're going to get mad as hell about it. We're going to get creative about it. We're going to think about what we can do as individuals. Right now, right here, in this moment, to demand freedom from the oligarchy that runs our country. You are listening to Mad as Hell in America with Adam Klugman on AM 620 KPOJ.